Good morning. This is a reading of the Taunton Daily Gazette for today, Tuesday, August 25th, 2026. Welcome to this reading. This is Mark White of the Talking Information Center. On the headlines this morning, ICE Sheriff Square off on a crash case. A fatal Taunton crash that killed a pedestrian in 2024 has sparked a clash between ICE and the Bristol County Sheriff's Office. Harrington De Silva Aredes is accused of striking and killing pedestrian Kenneth Carr in a Court Street crosswalk in Taunton in November 2024. Now the case is raising questions about immigration enforcement after the Federal Law Enforcement Agency Immigration Customs Enforcement, ICE, arrested Aredes during targeted operations in Taunton on August 6th of this year. ICE accused Bristol County Sheriff Paul Herreau, who operates jails in Dartmouth and New Bedford, of not cooperating with ICE and of not notifying ICE when Aredes was released from jail on bail. Herreau shot back that ICE routinely breaks laws to enforce the law and that I don't want to have anything to do with that. Aredes is from Brazil and was removed from the United States in 2008 before re-entering on an unknown date and at an unknown location, ICE said. Aredes' attorney, Thomas Natoli, declined to comment when reached by phone. Aredes was arraigned on two misdemeanors, motor vehicle homicide by negligent operation, and a crosswalk violation. He was arraigned in December 29, 2025 in connection with the Court Street crash. Aredes pleaded not guilty to the charges and cash bail was set at $2,500. Initially, Aredes did not pay the bail and was held at the Bristol County House of Corrections Jail in Dartmouth. But on July 31, 2026, the bail was paid and Aredes was freed and released from jail. It was after he was released that ICE arrested him in Taunton on August 6. A relative of Kenneth Carr, the pedestrian killed in the crash, declined to comment in a phone call with the Gazette on Thursday. But here's what we know. On Wednesday, November 20, 2024, Taunton police officers responded to a car crash at Court Street in Taunton. The vehicle was stopped just past the crosswalk. The vehicle had damage to the front right side. I learned that the vehicle was being operated by Harrington De Silva Aredes, who was not the registered owner of the vehicle. He was taken to the Taunton police station, where he agreed to conduct an interview after being read his Miranda rights. He said he was driving to Canaan Fuels in Taunton to purchase cigarettes. He stated that everything happened quickly, but when turning onto Court Street, he did observe the pedestrian in the sidewalk. He believed the pedestrian to have made it through the crosswalk, but then stepped back into the roadway. He said that his windshield was a little foggy, and he wasn't able to see clearly. The crash was captured on video by a dashboard camera on a school bus that was driving behind the vehicle. A crash investigation report was written by Taunton police officer after the crash, and the report concluded that Aredes had more than enough time and distance to stop his vehicle prior to striking Mr. Carr. ICE said that Bristol County Sheriff Paul Herreau followed through on his promise to not cooperate with ICE, resulting in the release of this habitual criminal illegal alien offender who is currently charged with vehicular homicide. Once bail was paid, he was legally required under Massachusetts law to release Aredes. It doesn't matter what their immigration status is or if the person is a citizen or not, Herreau said. If you post bail, he must let you go. Holding someone after they post bail would be doing federal immigration enforcement, something we are not authorized to do. Herreau said the Massachusetts Protect Act, which passed in the House and Senate and was signed into law by Governor Maura Healey in August 5th of 2026, would prohibit him from notifying ICE if someone was released from jail. He also said that, prior to the passage of the Protect Act, It was not his office's policy to notify ICE. We do not have to notify ICE if someone posts bail. My November 2025 policy was ahead of state law. Also on the front page, home prices rise in Bristol County. Newly released data from Realtor.com for May shows that potential buyers and sellers in Bristol County saw higher home sale prices than the previous month's median of $515,000. The median home sold for $530,000, and that means May, the most recent month for which figures are available, was up almost 3% from April. Compared to May of 2025, the median home sale prices was up 4% compared to $509,000. Realtor.com sources sales data from real estate deeds, resulting in a few months' delay in the data. The statistics don't include homes currently listed for sale and aren't directly comparable to listings data. Information on your local housing market, along with other useful community data, is available at data.tauntongazette.com. Here's a breakdown on median sale prices. Looking only at single-family homes, the $540,000 median selling price in Bristol County was up 3% in May from the month before. Since May of 2025, the sales price of a single-family home was up almost 5% from a median of $550,000. Condominiums and townhomes decreased by 3.5% in sales price during May to a median of $415,000. In May, the number of recorded sales in Bristol County dropped by 6.5% since May of 2025. Across Massachusetts, homes sold at a median of $656,000 during May, up 3.6% from April. And also on the front page, turning to the Trump administration, Trump announces hike on Canada auto tariffs. President Donald Trump said he's doubling tariffs on imported automobiles and auto parts from Canada to a rate of 50%, further escalating a trade war with the United States' northern neighbor that erupted over the weekend after negotiations between the two countries collapsed. Trump announced the move in an August 24th post on Truth Social, saying Canada has been ripping off the United States of America for years and accusing the country of placing ridiculously high tariffs on U.S. farm exports to Canada. He said the new tariff rate will begin on January 1st, 2027. Build in the U.S. and there are zero tariffs. Canada will also be treated like a state no longer. On trade and in other ways, also, they are among the worst nations in the world to deal with. They feel entitled, and yet we don't need Canada, they need us, Trump said. Trump's latest threat comes after 50% U.S. tariffs on many other Canadian goods went into effect just after midnight on August 22nd, after his administration was unable to strike a trade deal with Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney. Democrats seized on the tariffs ahead of the November midterms, warning the taxes on imports would result in American consumers paying higher costs. After ordering Canada's trade negotiations to return home, Carney said Canada will match Trump's tariffs dollar for dollar with the retaliatory tariffs to take effect on September 8th. Canada will impose tariffs on U.S. steel, dairy, appliances, agricultural equipment, pulp and paper, and electronics, along with some products the U.S. previously targeted in Canada. Carney said from Ottawa's Parliament building, the government will release details on its response in the coming days. We cannot accept what they have offered. We will not give what they have asked, Carney said. Carney is one of the few global leaders to retaliate against U.S. tariffs, and has pledged to forge new trade and military alliances despite Canada's dependence on the United States for nearly 70% of its exports. Trump last year imposed a baseline 25% tariff on imported automobiles and auto parts, though the rate differs for some trading partners based on deals reached with his administration. Trump, in social media posts, also said he would hike Canada's steel tariff to 50%, but it is already set at 50%. The 50% tariffs that went into effect August 22nd apply to just over 5% of Canadian exports to the United States, included on various goods such as wine, dairy, hockey sticks, and cement. Carney said about $28 billion worth of goods would be tariffed. They do not apply to exempted goods including energy, potash, fish, and critical minerals. The tariffs do not qualify for preferential treatment under the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Free Trade Agreement, which shielded many Canadian goods from earlier U.S. tariffs. U.S. Trade Representative Jamieson Greer called the breakdown a missed opportunity for Canada to partner with the United States, saying no new talks were planned with Canada. On page 2, the ex-deputy is convicted in Massey's killing dies. Sean Grayson, the former Sangamon County Sheriff's deputy convicted of murdering Sonia Massey in her home in 2024, died on August 23rd. Daniel Fultz of Springfield, one of Grayson's defense attorneys, confirmed the death. Messages seeking comment from the Illinois Department of Corrections were not immediately returned to the State Journal Register, part of the USA Today network. Grayson's death comes a little over 3 weeks after his hearing before the Illinois Prison Review Board. Grayson, who was being held out of state, sought early release, but the board denied his request in a 3-0 vote. Panel members did not comment on the case after hearing testimony and voting. Grayson sought the hearing under a statute enacted in Illinois in 2022 that allows prisoners who have terminal illnesses or advanced medical conditions to apply for release. He was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer in 2023 and stage 4 rectal cancer and cancer in his liver and lungs later on. The former sheriff's deputy was serving a 20-year sentence after a Peoria County jury convicted him of second-degree murder in October. He had faced first-degree murder charges before the 9-woman, 3-man jury received instructions on the lesser charge of second degree. Many supporters of Massey, a 36-year-old black woman and the mother of 2 children, didn't believe a second-degree murder conviction was harsh enough. Grayson, who is white, was sentenced to the maximum term on January 7th. Grayson fatally shot Massey in her home on July 6, 2024, after she called 911 to report a possible intruder. Video from the body-worn camera of Grayson's partner captured the shooting and drew international attention to the case. Grayson did not activate his body-worn camera until after the shooting. Inside Massey's home, Grayson told her to take a pot of water off the stove. While holding the pot, Massey said, "I rebuke you in the name of Jesus," Grayson responded, "You better not," and that he would shoot Massey. He pulled out his weapon and yelled at Massey to drop the pot. "Okay, I'm sorry," Massey said, before ducking behind her kitchen counter. Grayson approached and fired 3 times, striking Massey once in the face, and she was pronounced dead at a nearby hospital. Concerning Massey's comment, "I interpreted this to mean she was going to kill me," Grayson wrote in his official report. Within weeks, Grayson was fired and arrested on murder charges. To resolve a federal probe by the Justice Department, the Sheriff's Office and County agreed to update its procedures and training to better engage with those experiencing mental health crises. Very, very sad story. On page 3, U.S. opens Arizona cattle port to Mexico. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has reopened a cattle port in Arizona after closing more than a year ago to prevent the spread of the New World screwworm in America. The cattle crossing gate between Agua Prieta, Sonora, and Douglas, Arizona, was reopened August 24th as part of a phased plan to reopen southern border ports closed because of the threat of the parasitic fly. The closure of the southern ports of entry for the last year has been a tough but necessary action to control the spread of NWS in Mexico and protect the American livestock industry, said Agricultural Secretary Brooke Rollins on July 24th. Thanks to the work across the federal government as well as state, local, and industry partners, it is now safe to reopen the Douglas, Arizona port in 30 days to resume the 100-year-old movement of cattle. The port was closed on May 11, 2025 because of the rapid spread of the New World screwworm across Central America and Mexico. And more than a year later, on July 3rd, the United States confirmed its first screwworm case in Zavala County, Texas. On August 20th, the USDA confirmed on social media that Sonora, Mexico had confirmed a screwworm case, but it would not change its plans to reopen the port. The necessary resources, personnel, technology, laboratory support, and interagency coordination are in place and ready in Douglas, the USDA's post read. We remain committed to continuous monitoring and will adjust protocols as conditions warrant to maintain the highest standards. Looking on, page 5, VW CEO says the situation is more than critical. Volkswagen CEO Oliver Blume warned on August 21st that the car sector's problems would only intensify in the coming years, arguing deep cuts, cost cuts were needed to keep Europe's top automaker afloat as it gears up for weeks of crunch talks over a planned revamp. Blume's comments come as Volkswagen is undergoing what is considered to be its largest ever restructuring, possibly ranging from a fresh $50,000 job cuts to the carve-out of some divisions. Squeezed by aggressive Chinese competition rushing to Europe, falling profits in China and painful import tariffs in the United States, Volkswagen is struggling with declining profits and costly overcapacity in Europe. The situation is more than critical, Blume said in the memo, adding that while current margins of less than 4% were solid in the current environment, it is by no means sufficient to generate enough funds in the long term for new technologies, new products, and our sites. Blume said the German carmaker's overhead costs remain more than 30% higher than those of comparable firms, adding this had to be tackled to remain competitive. VW's supervisory board is scheduled to meet on September 4th to continue its discussion on the turnaround plans. While the group has not officially quantified the size of additional job cuts, sources have told Reuters it could be an additional 50,000, effectively doubling the group's planned layoffs. The frequently cited figure of around 50,000 jobs worldwide is not a fixed target, Blume said, adding it was derived from the company's cost objective relative to the competition and served as an indicator of the scale of the action required. In July, Volkswagen unveiled plans to drastically cut its model lineup and further pare back capacity. The controlling of families behind VW early in August dialed up the pressure on all stakeholders and demanded dramatic restructuring efforts. In national news, Indiana residents are still without power 2 weeks after the storm. Thousands of northwestern Indiana residents remain without electricity nearly 2 weeks after a violent August 11th storm. Officials have taken to social media voicing frustration over the lengthy restoration delays. Roughly 9,000 customers in Gary, Indiana remained without electricity on August 23rd. We're at day 12, and 12 days is too long for families to be without power, said Gary Mayor Eddie Melton. 12 days is too long for parents to worry about their children, for businesses to lose revenue, and for families to wonder when the relief is finally going to come. I want you to know I share that frustration. That violent storm, with high winds of 70 miles per hour to more than 100 miles per hour, swept across northern Illinois and northwestern Indiana on August 11th, knocking down many trees and damaging homes and power lines. Indiana Governor Mike Braun voiced concerns in an August 23rd post. The Indiana National Guard and teams from other states' agencies have been mobilized to literally clear away the way for the utility crews. There's no excuse for these delays. The area's electrical provider, the Northern Indiana Public Service Company, reported on August 23rd, being on Monday, that 16,476 customer accounts remained without electricity. So hang in there, boy, that is tough. All right, let's go to see if we can see any other more local news. There are bear encounters on the rise in several states. Bear sightings and encounters are on the rise in Colorado and elsewhere in the U.S. as the animals travel out of the wild and into populated areas. Colorado Parks and Wildlife officers have been busy recently with a series of run-ins with bears finding their ways into cars, homes, and apartment complexes. The increased sightings come as bears enter hyperphagia, the time in the annual biological cycle when they search for food to build up fat reserves for the winter. In Colorado, at least, drought has made it tougher for bears to find food in nature. And when they can't find that, they begin foraging in trash cans and looking for food that humans may leave within reach. This summer in particular, we asked people to be mindful that wildlife are having to work harder to find food and water. The best thing we can do to support them is to keep them wild and not feed or disturb them, said Casey Cooley, a Colorado Parks and Wildlife Habitat Conservation Supervisor. So this year, Colorado Parks and Wildlife so far has received over 6,000 reports of bear sightings and conflicts. Through August 13th, nearly twice what the state agency received during the same period last year. The total has already surpassed the reports recorded during all of 2025. It is on pace to be the highest since the agency began digitally tracking bear and human interactions in 2019. Other recent bear sightings include a report from the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission that said an adult female black bear swatted at a resident in North Asheville after entering their home on August 18th. The bear opened an unlocked door while her three cubs played on the front porch. The resident was treated and released from a local hospital with injuries that were not life-threatening. And the stories go on and on. A black bear caused a commotion in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, on July 18th when it trotted around a parking lot. Bears have also been spotted around Pittsburgh this summer, and many have been in Stowe, Vermont. In New Mexico, a man died from injuries sustained in August 20th bear attack that occurred in Crystal, a community within Navajo Nation near the New Mexico-Arizona border. Law enforcement killed the bear, and the following day a bear bit a man who was camping near Red River, New Mexico. This year, New Mexico has had the highest number of human-bear conflicts since 2014. So be careful out there, y'all. All of you who are camping away. Okay, let's look quickly at just a couple of sports stories before we wrap things up. 10 Greater Taunton matches to watch this season. Another girls' high school soccer season is soon to set start in the Greater Taunton area. Last year, Bristol Plymouth led the way locally, capturing its first Mayflower Large title since 2016 and winning the MVADA Large State Championship while reaching the Div 2 preliminary round. Bridgewater Raynham captured the inaugural Pac-3 crown and reached the MIAA Division 1 round of 16 while Bristol Aggie both hosted and won an MIAA tournament match for the first time and reached the Division 5 round of 32. Dighton-Rehoboth had another solid season, reaching the Division 3 round of 32. Taunton, meanwhile, continued its upward trajectory, just narrowly missing out on the Division 1 tournament. Now, ahead of the opening kickoff, here's 10 Greater Taunton Area girls soccer matches to watch out for this fall. On September 8th, Bridgewater-Raynham versus Falmouth. September 14th, Taunton versus Stoughton. September 15th, Bristol Aggie at Old Colony. And I won't read them all, but on September 30th, Dighton-Rehoboth versus Appanet. And one final story in sports this morning. Pats are ready for regular season and a Super Bowl rematch. The days before the New England Pats and the Seattle Seahawks season opener will satisfy the desire for football more than the preseason meeting against the Eagles. The true competitive snaps against Philadelphia came after 2 days at Gillette Stadium's practice fields. Saturday was only a game day dress rehearsal for both sides, with nearly identical Super Bowl odds this summer. Drake May, A.J. Brown, and Romeo Doubs were all absent New England's 24-21 victory. Jalen Hurts, Devontae Smith, and Saquon Barkley took a similar route on a humid night in Foxborough. May likely won't play in any preseason action this summer, a benefit of coming runner-up in the MVP voting last year. New England finishes the summer at the Cleveland Browns on Thursday, but the third-year quarterback can do without trial games as Tommy DeVito managed the quarterback duties again for the Patriots. I don't think we have a very deep team, Variable said, so I think we have to make sure that we're preparing our football team and that we're doing everything that we can to keep our best players available. And if that means playing Thursday, part of the preparation, that's what we'll do. We've not yet made a decision yet. I think, obviously, we always want to win. We want to win. We want to compete. But it was the competing and the fighting through some adversity and things that I needed to see from some young guys that really need to show it pretty quickly. DeVito's highlight, a 69-yard touchdown pass to Kyle Williams, provided the only true intrigue of the night. Williams and Efton Chisholm III represented the crowded receiver room's first half snaps. Mac Hollins, Kayshawn Boutte, and Demaris Douglas watched with the rest of the offense from the sideline. That likely means they're all safe, barring a trade from any roster cutdowns. Williams, a third-round pick last year, not making the 53-man team, would add some shock factor to end the summer. Just want to give Williams as many opportunities to continue to improve and do the things that we've asked him to improve on, and he knows he needs to improve on. I love his ability outside the numbers to be able to stretch the field, and we wanted to give him some more opportunities to be able to do that. Chisholm made last year's roster as an undrafted free agent out of Eastern Washington. He caught just 3 passes over 8 appearances last season. Saturday night saw the shifty receiver pull in 4 catches for 45 yards while returning a punt. That's the best possible situation you can ask for an organization, to have so many options where you have to make hard decisions like that, DeVito said of the receiver group. But again, it's just a testament to the coaching and to the guys of just coming in every day, putting their hard hats on and work. I try not to make any rep for granted, Chisholm said. You only get so many. You don't know how many you are going to get. Even if it's in practice or in a game, just trying to go out there and leave everything out there. New England might start week 1 with 7 receivers. There are 5 more days before the preseason finale and an additional 3 days before roster cuts are due. These games for contending teams are intended to test the depth. New England's ironing out the edges of its roster, and that should be a familiar change to the region at this time in the season. I felt like we really competed, Vrabel said. the guys that were in there tonight in the game completed in the second half, and I think that's probably the thing that I'll take away for the last 3 or 4 days. And that, my friends, is a reading of the Taunton Daily Gazette for today, Tuesday, August 25th. It's going to be a gorgeous day. Have a good one, and I will see you again next Tuesday. This is Mark White of the Talking Information Center.